judging ain't dumb, and all whites not racist. I be judging by the mind and heart, I ain't really in the faces. Though the way that we living is not getting better, you gotta know how to survive. Crazy, I had to tell all of my loved ones to carry a gun when they going outside. Stay in the mirror whenever you drive, overprotect, go crazy for mine. You gotta pay attention to the sign, seem like the blind following the blind. Think about everything that's going on, I put security up in my home.
Hello, this is Liliana.
I'm Danaya.
And I'm Badila.
And we're from Perfect 10 After School,
a wonderful club for girls in Hudson, New York.
And you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA.
Community radio for Columbia and Greene counties.
Perfect 10 girls got it going on.
Oh, yeah.
On Saturday, October 22nd, come out to Wave Farm and view the installations as part of WGXC's Fall Pledge Drive. Noon to 6 p.m. on Saturday, October 22nd, Wave Farm will welcome drop-in visitors for tours of the campus, including the WGXC Acre Studio and the many installations on the property that employ radio in some way. Also, community members and local nonprofit organizations can come by to record public service announcements to air on 90.7 FM, and members of the public can record a station ID for WGXC. Again, that's Wave Farm is open for visits on Saturday, October 22nd during the WGXC Fall Pledge Drive from noon to 6 p.m. Go to WGXC.org for more information, and we'll see you on Saturday, October 22nd at Wave Farm.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Delmar Wellness Center of Alachua, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You're tuned to Radio Art, creative transmissions, sound experiments, noise, and more on WGXC 90.7 FM Acre.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Georgia, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia, and I'm also from Hudson.
My name's Fatia. I'm 8 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
And I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson as well.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love.
Books we hate.
And bookish things.
Ooh, in unison. Nice.
It worked!
And that's what we'll do today. We're excited to have everybody here today.
Woohoo! We got the crew back.
Yeah. We have our big age range crew here. We have our youngest member, Fatia, and our oldest member, who is not me, Amelia. I'm definitely the oldest. Yeah, Amelia's been on the show a long time.
How long?
A while. I think I was on the show back when we had the studio by the park in Warren.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by 7th Street Park, also known as Public Square. Have to say that, or Tom Rowe will get me.
How many years?
Let me see. Amelia's first show was May 1st, 2017.
Wow.
Yep.
When was mine?
You were January 15th, 2021. And Fatia's first show was July 10th, 2020. And my first show was February 28th, 2011.
Bum, bum.
But anyways, we're happy to be here. We love talking about books on the radio, and we're going to do that today. Why don't we start with Amelia?
Hello. Hello. Well, I went to Barnes & Noble yesterday, so this is great timing because I have a whole collection to talk about here. First of all, it's my favorite month of the whole year. It's about to be my favorite holiday of the whole year, so I got to talk about something like freaky. Of course I do. I have a book that I got called Strange Tales from Japan, 99 Chilling Stories of Yokai, Ghosts, Demons, and the Supernatural, collected and retold by Keisuke Nishimoto and translated by William Scott Wilson. And it is about yokai and demons from Japan, which, if you don't know about yokai, they are basically Japanese spirits and demons and stuff. And they literally have one for everything. There is a demon for anything you could imagine. There's a lot of them. And this book kind of retells a bunch of stories about them. You've got everything from like malicious ones to kind of just mischievous ones. There's a whole section about ones that are associated with lakes and rivers and water. Foxes and tanuki are a big symbol in Japanese folklore, so there's a bunch of them. Yeah, and it's wild. I've flipped through a bit of it, and it looks cool. There's a story in here titled The Priest Who Was Eaten by a Dog. Don't know what that's going to entail, but it's certainly there. And, yeah, so I've got that. All the stories are, like, maybe they're all 3 to 4 pages long, but the amount of stories in here, like, amount to, like, 315 pages. That should tell you just how many of these things there are. It's pretty cool.
Sounds right up your alley.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
If I'm not talking about a Junji Ito comic, I'm talking about something weird like this.
Cool. I saw a book recently that I thought you would like, called The United States of Cryptids, A Tour of American Myths and Monsters by J.W. Auker.
Oh my gosh. I used to have the Scary States of America book. I say used to. I do have it, but it's so old that it's kind of falling apart somehow, so I don't read it very much. It makes me sad that it's falling apart in my hands, but I used to love that one.
In this United States of Cryptids, the description, it mentions one of the monsters, well, it mentions several of the monsters that are included in the book, but my favorite one is called Bat Squatch. It says, Bat Squatch of Washington, a winged Bigfoot that is said to have emerged from the eruption of Mount St. Helens. I just like that it's like Sasquatch, but a bat. So Bat Squatch. I don't know. It's a funny name. That's cool. I'm glad you got a nice stack of books. There's nothing like going to a bookstore or a library and just coming back with a huge stack of books.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very fun.
Thanks for sharing that. How about Georgia? Would you like to share next?
Yes, I would. So today I'm going to share Starfish by Lisa Phipps. Now, I know I usually share graphic novels. Change of plan today. So this is a novel. I am 31 pages in. Is incredible so far. And the main character, Ellie, is actually my age. This takes place, though, in the summer going into the beginning of sixth grade, which is what I'm in. And I wish that there were more books like this out there that are just open to talking about stuff that this book talks about, but I'm not going to spoil it. I'm going to read the description. And it's all made of poetry, so every page is a poem.
What's funny is I read this book a couple summers ago when it first came out, and I forgot that it was a novel in verse, and I think it's partly because I listened to the audiobook, and it was not as clear that it was in verse when just listening to it. But I agree, it's a great book. I like the main character a lot.
Ever since Ellie wore a whale swimsuit and made a big splash at her 5th birthday party, she's been bullied by her weight. To cope, she tries to live by the fat girl rules, like no making waves, avoid eating in public, and don't move so fast that your body jiggles. And she's found her safe space, her swimming pool, where she feels weightless in a fat-obsessed world. In the water, she can stretch herself out like a starfish and take up all the room she wants. It's also where she can get away from her pushy mom, who thinks criticizing Ellie's weight will motivate her to diet. Fortunately, Ellie has allies in her dad, her therapist, and her new neighbor, Catalina, who loves Ellie for who she is. With this support buoying her, Ellie might finally be able to cast aside the fat girl rules and starfish in real life by unapologetically being her own fabulous self.
It's a very good book. That's cool that you're reading it. And it's cool that it's a novel in verse, even though I didn't realize it was one, because I love novels in verse. I think they're really fun to read.
Me too.
What did you want to share today, Fatia?
I'm sharing a book today. It's called Yasmin the Chef.
It's written by Sadia Baryu and illustrated by Hatsim Ali. This book is like from my school's library. Chapter 1, Party Creep. On Saturday morning, Yasmin woke up very excited. Tonight, they were having a party. Music, friends, and best of all, staying up late. She could hardly wait. But first, there was a lot of work to be done. Cooking, cleaning, and more. After breakfast, Dad began vacuuming the living room. Want to help, Yasmin? He asked. I'll take Polish Patrol, Yasmin said. Yasmin wiped the coffee table until it shone. She polished the mirror until it sparkled, and she washed the windows till they squeaked. Phew, good girl, Dad hugged Yasmin. Let's go see if Mom needs help. Chapter 2.
So, Fatia, I'm going to cut you off because we actually can't read the whole book on the radio. It's not allowed, but that's fun hearing a little bit of it. I love that series. Have you read the whole book yet?
Yeah, I read a couple times and I really loved it. I'm not sure when I was like in a lower grade, I might have had to read the whole, like, all of these Yasmin books, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm
curious. So which one is it that you were, I missed the full title. So it's Meet Yasmin, or is it something else?
It's Yasmin the Chef.
Oh, okay. So one thing that I think is cool about those Yasmin books is that you can get ones like Yasmin the Chef, which is a shorter book, or sometimes they compile them. So you might get a book that has three of the books in one, and they're all really good stories. I like Yasmin a lot and her family.
Yeah, I'm really super excited to read more of them.
And each one, she's like, has a different role. So it might be Yasmin the artist, Yasmin the librarian, Yasmin the cook, Yasmin, I forget what all of them are, but it's like architect maybe, or engineer. Something like that.
Oh yeah, there's some like that are.
Oh, is there some in the back of the book that show all the different covers? Yeah.
Yeah, they're the like Yasmin the painter, Yasmin the explorer, Yasmin the builder, Yasmin the fashionista, or whatever that says. Yasmin the teacher, Yasmin the superhero, Yasmin the chef, Yasmin the zookeeper. There's a lot.
Yeah. And these are chapter books, but they have really nice pictures in them too.
Mm-hmm.
I like the illustrations.
I just hope on my next book, and if I go like on like the end and I see like different books there, I'm gonna be like, whoa, there's so much. But I'm not sure how much Yasmin books there are.
Well, I think she's still making them, I think. So there'll be more and more, hopefully. So this one's Yasmin the Chef. Yeah. So is she making food for a certain occasion in the book?
Like, it's like for a party. Like at the end of the book, I saw like some people come at the end. Like, I thought she was making like some sandwiches because it's like, at the beginning of the book, at the first page, literally showed a picture of her like holding a sandwich.
Ah.
Well, at least I think it's one.
Cool. Do you like to cook, like Yasmin?
Yeah, I like to cook.
Do you have any specialties? Anything that you're best at cooking?
Yeah. I think it would be like a sandwich, a simple sandwich.
Simple sandwich?
I'm not good at cooking yet, but I feel like working in a restaurant when I grow older.
Oh, cool. Well, I hope you get to read more of those Yasmin books. I know we have a lot of them at the library. I don't know if we have all of them, but we might. I get the collected versions for our library. So there might be, I don't know if it takes a while between them, the individual ones coming out for us to add them. But anyways, I also have a book I can share today. And this one it's actually a book for adults. So I think Amelia might be interested in it. I think it would be a good crossover book for mature teens as well. There's nothing, you know, super inappropriate. You know, it acknowledges that there are adult relationships in the book, but there's nothing graphic in there. And I think it would be of interest to a lot of teens. But anyways, the book is called Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. It's by Gabrielle Zevin, who has also written a number of books for teens, as well as other books for adults. And it's really good. It follows primarily two friends into adulthood. It spans 30 years in total, this novel. But the friends meet in college and they are studying to be game designers. And so it follows them sort of as they go from their college career into the adult workplace and their relationships as friends and colleagues as they start a business together. And I'm not like a big gamer. Like I appreciate games. I respect games. And I think I play board games far more. Well, I know I play board games far more than computer games. This is really centered in video games or computer game world. So it's not like a world that I'm like super invested in, but it was really interesting seeing that world. And I think the character development was really strong, and the storytelling was really interesting. But yeah, it's a really good book. I will read the description in case I'm missing anything in my description here. On a bitter cold day in the December of his junior year at Harvard, Sam exits a subway car and sees, amid the hordes of people waiting on the platform, Sadie Green. He calls her name. For a moment, she pretends she hasn't heard him, but then she turns and a game begins, a legendary collaboration that will launch them to stardom. These friends, intimate since childhood, borrow money, beg favors, and before even graduating college, they have created their first blockbuster, Ichigo. Overnight, the world is theirs. Not even 25 years old, Sam and Sadie are brilliant, successful, and rich, but these qualities won't protect them from their own creative ambitions or the betrayals of their hearts. Spanning 30 years from Cambridge, Massachusetts to Venice Beach, California, and lands in between and far beyond, Gabrielle Zevin's Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow is a dazzling and intricately imagined novel that examines the multifarious nature of identity, disability, failure, the redemptive possibilities in play, and above all, our need to connect, to be loved, and to love. Yes, it is a love story, but it is not the one you have read before. And reading that description makes me realize I said something incorrect before. They don't meet in college. That's when their collaboration as game designers takes off. But they meet when they're younger and then they reconnect as adults. But yeah, it's a really great book. It's the first book I've read in a while where I feel like I just kind of wanted to, like, I was listening to the audiobook and I just wanted to listen to it like all the time. I think a lot of people would enjoy it.
Sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I thought I feel like the storytelling is really interesting. Like they shift up how it's told at times. So there's one part of the book where you're kind of in a game with them, which is interesting. I think it's also interesting. There's some commentary in there around, like, which I can imagine happening with game designers a lot, like thinking about your life as gameplay, where it's like you make certain choices that like take you here or there, and how like little things can like set you on a path for something. But unlike in games your character can die and come back and they can die and come back. You get to sort of restart from scratch again, and in real life you can't do that. You can certainly, there's times when you can kind of start afresh again, but certain things you can't change. But yeah, so that's Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle Zevin. And the title, it's taken from a line in Macbeth, a famous line in Macbeth that plays into one of the games that is designed within this book. But it's interesting. They have, they describe these games that they've created and makes you want to play them all. But they don't actually exist, except there is one, at least one of them, that is one of the games that Sadie made in college that you can actually play online, which is called Emily Blaster. And it's a game where you read a section of a poem by Emily Dickinson. And then it's basically like a kind of like a Space Invaders style game where there's like words falling down the screen, kind of like bouncing back and forth, and you're trying to shoot the words in the order of the poem. And I've tried it, and it was very hard for me. I couldn't win. I wasn't very good at aiming and getting those words, but it was still fun to try.
That's so cool. What's that book called again?
It's called Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. I would say it's probably, I think it would be better for teens and adults.
Oh, I know.
That's not to say that you can't read it, but.
Oh, I know. I was just going to say, I'm going to save it for like 2 years. From yeah. Now, year and a half.
Yeah, save it up. You can put it on
here. Because I'll be a teenager in like a year and 4 months.
Woo.
Boo.
Boo.
I don't want to be a teenager.
No.
I want to turn into a grumpy swamp monster.
Oh, dear. I don't think I was a grumpy swamp monster.
Everyone tells me that when I get to teenagehood, I'm going to be a grumpy swamp monster. And I don't want to be a grumpy swamp monster.
Not all teens are grumpy swamp monsters.
A lot of them are. I don't want all my friends to be grumpy swamp monsters.
I don't know. I feel like most teens that I know and knew when I was a teen, I would not identify as grumpy swamp monsters. There are certainly things that are frustrating. And times when you're maybe like sad or upset or frustrated but I would say for the most part, human beings are not grumpy swamp monsters of all ages. Well, before we go for today, does anyone have anything else that they're excited about, looking forward to, any news to report?
Well, I'm looking forward to rereading Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark as I do every October.
Yay. I can't remember. So I was at a wedding recently, and somebody had a daughter or has a daughter who's a tween who really wants to watch a scary movie, but they get really scared really easily. So the parent was asking if we had any recommendations for not too scary movies. And I was thinking Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is, I think, would be like the best first time horror movie for someone to watch.
Yeah.
PG-13. It has intense scenes, but you can easily fast forward through them and you won't lose any of the plot. I think that is the best first time horror movie that anyone could ever watch, is Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
That was what I suggested too.
Mm-hmm.
I think the book is scarier than the movie.
Yes.
Those pictures are terrifying.
Especially the story Harold. The story Harold is way scarier in the book than it is in the movie. Well, I read those books, I'm pretty sure, when I was around for Tia's age, and I don't know why we were allowed to read them.
I would say Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, but then again, I get scared so easily, and I watched it, and I had nightmares for like a month or two. Because they, like, the bad guys have these, like, white eyes, and they freak me out.
I
wasn't scared by the monsters, though, because, like, they're so unrealistic. They're obviously CGI, but, like, the white eyes just freaked me out. Just, like, with monsters, you know they're not real, but with humans, how can you know? Because humans are real.
They are.
Other good first-time horror movies that I've seen, got books on the brain, are Lights Out is pretty good for a first time horror movie, and Insidious, the first one, is actually
that's not too scary.
I don't think so. I watched it with my parents, and it's pretty normal paranormal horror movie fare. At least the first movie is.
I wonder if this daughter would consider things like Ghostbusters a scary movie, because I feel like Ghostbusters or Little Shop of Horrors, they're a little creepy.
Little Shop of Horrors would be perfect.
I was terrified of that as a child, but I was like six, so.
I watched it. I got like, like halfway Gremlins. Through it. I got halfway through, but then I was watching a bunch of scary stuff at once, so I stopped and forgot about it. My dad saw the play, and it's the opposite of the movie. Instead of having a good ending, the dude throws himself into the plant, and unlike the movie, he doesn't save the girl. He gets eaten. And then my dad said that, like, at the ending, these vines would literally drop down the ceiling, like, onto your head. And then everyone would, like, scream because it is so unexpected.
Okay, I'm looking at actually PG-13 horror movies online because I cannot remember which one of the ones I've actually watched are PG-13. And there's one called Tremors, which was made in 1990 and isn't that scary, but it is pretty good.
I have a vague recollection of that.
It turns out both The Grudge and The Ring are PG-13, which I'm shocked by, but those are not first-time horror
movies.
They're
not first-time.
Cloverfield is good if you like found footage and also like sci-fi elements, because that is definitely more sci-fi and found footage than horror. And it was actually one of the first big found footage horror films. So Cloverfield is definitely, it's super good. It's super good. I love Cloverfield, the original Cloverfield, yes. Not 10 Cloverfield Lane. And The Village is an M. Night Shyamalan movie, which is also not that scary. And it would also be a good like introduction to horror, because it really isn't that scary. And it'd be interesting to see if she could guess the twist at the end, because I guessed the twist at the end of The Village. I was upset by the twist at the end of The Village because it was so predictable, but you know. That is my list of recommendations for first-time horror movies, but definitely Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
I thought that was a good pick. Somebody was like, maybe the Fear Street movie, and I was like, no, that's so much scarier.
No. Same thing with like anything with Creepshow. A lot of people seem to think Creepshow is for children, and it is not. It is not for children.
I'm interested in this new series, The Midnight Club. It's a new Netflix series.
I've seen ads for that.
I haven't seen it yet, but I think that seems like a fun, possibly early scary, you know, it's definitely geared towards teens.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it was based on a Christopher Pike book. I thought I saw that somewhere, which I don't know if you all know Christopher Pike. But when I was George's age, Christopher Pike was like him and like R.L. Stine pre-Goosebumps. Those were like two of the major like scary story writers for tweens. Mm. And I read so many of those books. I don't remember if I read Midnight Club. It may have come out a little bit later than when I would have read it, because I think I read those more like early middle school. But I've kind of wanted to like go back and read one of those old horror books that I read when I was a tween. Mm. See if they're still any good. I don't know if they were any good when I read them, but I liked them. Mm. But anyways, cool. Thanks for some more suggestions.
Yeah, the first horror movies I ever watched were paranormal horror movies, and they kind of follow a pretty predictable formula. Mm-hmm. So once you watch like a few of those, you're kind of ready to like start moving up.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the first horror movie I ever watched was I think it was The Conjuring, actually.
Oh, okay.
Which, and all those movies follow the same kind of formula.
Fun. Fatia, did you have anything you wanted to share that you're excited for?
I'm like really excited about my birthday.
Oh yeah, it is soon. Good to know. We'll have to wish you a happy birthday on the next show. I'm excited for the Ghostly Gallop, which is Sunday, October 30th. And there's a kids 1 mile fun run. And we're hoping like all of the kids in the Hudson area sign up. We know not all of the kids will sign up, but we hope everybody will register for that, because every kid that registers will get their own personal bib with like their name on it. So they can run with their name on them. There's going to be a costume contest, and it's just a really fun day. And we're really excited. It's in person this year. It's been virtual the past 2 years, but this is the 22nd running of the Ghostly Gallop, including the virtual ones. And so there's a 5K for adults and teens, and I guess kids could run it too if they want. And we've had some parents that like run it with a stroller, so like babies can participate. Or
I'm always impressed when I see people run with strollers. Like, you're already that far, you're gonna push the stroller too. Like, I could never.
But yeah, so people can check out the Ghostly Gallop at ghostlygallop.info for information about the event, and hope to see some people out there. It's a fun community event.
Yay.
Oh, and yeah, so there's a costume contest, and it's really fun to see people in costume running.
At the Opera House?
No, this is for the Ghostly Gallop.
Oh,
there is all of the like Halloween activities later that afternoon on the same day.
I've done the Opera House one a few times. I didn't win, but it's really fun.
Well, maybe you could enter two costume contests in the same day. You could go to the Ghostly Gallop in the morning.
Ooh. This year, I'm going to be a gumball machine. No one's
too much. Yeah. That's awesome.
And I won't tell you how I'm going to do it.
I'm setting up my whole house to be like that house this Halloween.
Oh, yeah.